Thanks, Sinead. Hello, good morning. You're very welcome to the programme. Between now and nine, a one-in-a-million chance lamb born in a ring fort in Tipperary. Moving farms, lock, stock and barrel from Connemara to Leinster. Getting ticked off at Ticks in Galway and getting irate with the AI man in Limerick. Never mind what the weather is doing right now, people. What you need to see this morning is the big picture, because in the last few days, the sun inched its way north in the sky, getting closer and closer to the equator, until at a minute past nine on Thursday morning, an exactly equal amount of sun was falling on the northern hemisphere and on the southern hemisphere at the same time. The spring equinox. Astronomical spring has sprung. So that means that from that moment on Thursday morning on, the sun is ours again until autumn. And as a little reward to myself for making it through another winter that Thursday morning, I spent a few sunbathed hours in the company of Tipperary organic sheep farmer Maurice Leamy in the middle of lambing his 200 ewes. If for no other reason than every once in a while, it's really nice to be in the company of somebody who absolutely loves what they do.
Now, this is a precarious bridge. Why would you not have put an extra plank in so there's no risk of me falling through there?
Because the sheep then would walk across.
Ah,
that's the idea of that. They don't. They stay at this side. Other than that, they'd be walking across. But there's the ring fort now, Philip. There are all the ancient burial grounds. You see the little ring there on top?
Can I take my life in my hands and stray into the middle of it, do you reckon?
Go on, there's no issue. They seem to come in here to lamb. I don't know why, but that's what they do. A lot of them have come in here to lamb.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know what's in it.
And would they come in here into the middle of the ring fort rather than take shelter in the trees around the edge?
A lot of them have come and just lambed here on top of it for some reason. I'm not saying it's a maternity ward, but a lot of them have come here. Yeah.
That's gas.
It is gas, yeah.
And have you any idea what we're talking about here? Bronze Age?
Oh, I'd say so, yeah.
Does it give you a sense of just being one of a long line of people who have lived and worked here?
Oh, listen, we're the custodians of land, but we're passing through, Philip, you know. I have a tree here with native Irish bees, and they're very important because apparently they're rare, and just this little alder tree. They're rare, and do you know, I said they're not aggressive, but they're coming a bit close to me now, Philip, so I'm going to move back. But they're rare, and to think that they're... Look at it, see the mountain coming there now, it's beautiful, isn't it? But to think that I have them on my farm, and I suppose why I might have them on my farm is because no pesticides, no herbicides, no chemical fertilisers. So that all helps. I think it's the same with the owls as well, you know, that they'll... Where everything is real natural for them, that's where they'll thrive. Go back to nature the way it was years ago, and just feel the energy that they can derive from it. And it's positive, Philip. It's all positive energy.
Okay, it is positive, but you know there'll be a lot of people who will say, and not entirely incorrectly, that's a very rose-tinted view of trying to make a living from the land.
Well, that's true. And I suppose, you know, agriculture in this country has changed over the years. The idea of the family farm has changed. It's gone very intensive, especially the dairying. But I've had lots of friends that have gone to the eternal reward. A lot of them were very wealthy people. I didn't see any hitch in their hearse, you know. I didn't. And, you know, especially with the dairying now, it's like an almost like take over and grab and take as much as you can. And, I mean, these guys... I don't know, they're living, but I don't know how they're life.
Is that the reason behind getting out of dairying and into sheep?
No, the reason I got out of dairying was, you can see the streams right beside my farmyard. Hmm. And when I got out of cows in 2004, I was actually milking 70 cows, five at a time. But it was just, when you're beside the stream and beside water courses, and like I have lots of dikes, drains, two rivers, it's just impossible to keep it, you know, especially in dairying, you know, you're your average 700 kilo cow, she'll produce something like...
So you could see that and you just didn't turn a blind eye to it? And
yeah, it depends on your farm, it depends on your location. It just wasn't suiting that enterprise. Sheep, you know, less intensive, lots of hard work. Lots of hard work. It's more physical, you know what I mean? You'd be literally...
Is it really more physical?
Oh my God, it is, yeah. There'd be no need for the gym if you're into sheep, Philip.
This is a special little spot. What have you done here?
Oh, it's gorgeous. This is all oak. This year now, we can go in the second tinning and we'll take out a third of the oak. The ones that are crooked, you'll take out the ones that are bent over, you'll take out the ones that aren't growing that well or that could be forked, and you leave all the real nice ones. And you're just going to have just a beautiful oak woodland. I never see the really benefit of it.
That was my question. Yeah. Some people would say to you, not in your lifetime will you ever get anything out of this. What do you get out of it?
One oak tree, during its lifetime, can sequester over 10 tonnes of CO2 from the atmosphere. That's one oak tree. I've 8.5 acres of it here, so... Yeah, I'll never see the real beauty of it when they're really mature and stuff. It's going to take 80 years or so. But I don't care. I get more from it than I could ever get from it in a monetary value. You come up here in the evening, come up here in the morning. It's just kind of a meditation. And I'm not a tree hugger by any means, but I see the beauty in it and I do get this amazing kind of energy from them, you know. It's like when you were a child, Philip. Do you remember when you'd be in the fields and you'd be barefoot? Do you know the energy you can get from the ground? It's a bit like that. And it's the noise, you can hear the wind there now and it's just blowing through the trees there now. And it's all that kind of thing. Like, you just, like, compare that then to being in a town, in a city, being on concrete, being on this constant noise, being under pressure the whole time. This is heaven.
This might sound like a stupid question on an absolutely glorious spring day as we walk through your field looking up at the silver mines. Why do you like farming?
I love being the decider of my own enterprise and what I can do and what I needn't do, and no one to tell me you're doing this wrong, you're doing that wrong.
Just to be a bit of a contrarian, are you really your own boss? When you're a price taker, you can't control the price of an internationally traded commodity like lamb.
That's true. So, well, I suppose I've one great advantage, Philip, over a lot of people, and that is I have zero interest in money.
Now, how do you achieve that?
Well, I don't know. I've no interest in it. And, you know, the way I consider life is you can only eat so much, like, you know, fancy cars and all the rest of it, fine clothes and fine dining, it never interests me. All I ever wanted to be was happy, and I found happiness here.
What makes you most happy here?
Just today. Can you feel it? Can you see it?
I can, but I can also in my mind rewind the clock 3 months and say, God, how happy can it have been in the depths of the dark winter where you only have 7 hours of light in which to do things?
It's still beautiful, Philip. It's still beautiful, and every season has its beauty. And you know, you'll see different things in the farm and at different stages throughout the year, and it is all lovely. It's a relatively healthy river in that we have lots of different varieties of birds and stuff, and we have the ducks, we have the dipper, we have kingfishers. The little grey wagtails were here last night. It's just a lovely stream, and it needs to be kept that way. You know, it's important to kind of keep the water. I know the latest reports for the country was the water quality is improving, but it should never have been allowed to get bad.
It's all a little slice of heaven, Morris, but it is also a working farm.
Yeah.
Do you make a living from it?
I do, yeah. You know, with any farm, all we can do is leave it in a better way and place, that than when they got it. And nearly all farmers are doing that, you know, and want to do it. They're not going out to destroy their landscape or anything like that. They're under a lot of pressure, Philip. They're under a lot of pressure. Bills to pay and all the rest of it. But life is very fickle and very short, and it's for living. Instead of putting their arms around everything and trying to grab everything, maybe just take a step back and see what's important in life.
And a little aural sting in the tail there to remind you what is actually important in life. Maurice Leamy in Tipperary. And as if that wasn't treat enough, I have another treat for you. From the foothills of the silver mines in Tipperary to Gondane Mee, this is Eton Ní Coráin, one half, unfortunately, only, of Ancaid Glyn Ella, who is going to wake us gently this morning with Moldov.
She mauled of Inglani, she mauled of Onnery, she mauled of his session on Rosie. Schawin, she mauled, covroga tessa down. She mauled of Anglone Barlam. She mauled of Inglani, she mauled of Onnery, she mauled of his session on Rosie. Schawin che morau kofroga tasetan, she mauled of Anglone Barlam.
It is 22 minutes past 8 on a Saturday morning. I bet you there's nobody listening to this programme sounding that good. Thank you so much for that. Well done, you. I want to talk to you about the Rathcarn Gaeltachtaí Gondane Mí, celebrating 90 years since the first families moved there to form this Gaeltacht. How conscious, Eton, were you growing up there that you were in this Connemara enclave in the middle of Leinster? Did you compare yourselves to places like Athboy and Trim nearby, or was this just normal?
I would say it was completely normal. Now, we did obviously go to Blanche to shop or to First Isle, or we would head to Trim or Athboy for groceries, but...
You didn't feel like the Amish coming into town, no?
It didn't feel like Narnia, although people describe it as Narnia. But it didn't feel like... It didn't feel like anything different, although I guess...
But I think it is different.
It's so different.
Would you sing that way? Would you sing that song if you had been born in Athboy or Trim?
No. No, I wouldn't. Because in Rathcarn, we are so blessed with a really rich tradition and really rich culture. We are so... I would just say that the tradition just embodies us. Mm. And... Growing up, there was Shannos tradition, so that was a Shannos song. We were in Shannos dancing classes. And I wouldn't even say there were classes like at 7 o'clock, you will be here and you will practice, you know, at home. It was very natural. It was a really relaxed...
You were just kind of licking it up off the pavement,
totally,
so to speak.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to bring in other voices from Rathcarn here. Most of the families moved long before you would have been born because the Land Commission offered land there in 1935 first. So we've been talking to some who would have a memory of that move. Martino Maeloge made the journey from west to east as a small child in the 1950s. And Thrasa Vranach caught up with him in the calf shed on his farm where he was watching his grandchildren meeting the newborns.
It's a leading bagastin
show. Need a leading bagastin show, well. Cannot.
Shut up, leading bag.
As I pulled into the farmyard, Corach and Seamus wanted to show me the newborn calves. But the cow wasn't too happy to see them coming. Well,
Could you tell us about the temperature?
'1956, he came here.
Yes. I don't know how many came in 35, but some came in 36 and again in 37. Yeah, we came in 56 and another man came in 54 over the road, Mikkel Fagin was his name. As Glan Trasna, Onik Mikkel Fagin.
Agus Gaeilge Lugar Noi, the Agisha Connemara, all sure. Irish in Connemara, all yes. Irish that came up here to Rock Cairn.
Nid ydych chi'n mysio gymau'n sgol, o mae'n siach o trymau gymau'n sgol, i ffyr fo gan beirlam. Fi ydym yn o laidion yn sy'n rhoi feil, agos ni'r hyg mae sy'n yn feil ag yn bach yn sy'n laidion, so ni'r rhan wael am sy'n laidion o hymor byw. Ac ni'n mael reid lysio meil yn rhoi mae'n mas na blienta.
But obviously, not everybody speaks Irish here.
No, no, we're the only house. We were just the two houses here spoke Irish and another house about quarter of a mile up the road. That's all the Irish-speaking people. But I'd have to say, we had great neighbours here ever since we came in 56. Great neighbours, very good to us.
Yeah. I think that her hain agus beidir na dhéine rivishin a hánic in seas Colomar agus áit a chéile. It must have been hard for them coming here, and most of them, Irish was their native language, and then they had to maybe change a little bit and speak a bit of English.
Yeah, well, my father and mother were in England for 4 or 5 years, so they were good English speakers, but I know one lady came up from Athrawan and she used to speak Irish to her kids and they'd answer in English. She understood them but never spoke it.
She never spoke English?
She never spoke English, no.
And you've been farming for many a year?
60 years.
60 years?
Yeah, I'd say probably more. I was milking cows when I was 10 and that'd be 64 years ago. Yeah.
When people came here from Connemara and other parts and other Gaeltachts, they were given a house, they were given 22 acres and they were given a cow and a piglet.
Yeah.
The houses that were built here in the area, your own family had a part, had a hand in building those houses.
After we came here, my father was a contractor, he worked for the Land Commission as a blacklayer, and I served my time with him as a young man at the blacklaying, and then I'd done the carpentry, I went to England and I'd done a City and Guilds thing, which was a 6 months course. I told you were a carpenter, but I think that's a long time ago now. Yeah. A lot of people are of the idea that the people come up here and they got this land and cows and whatever. Anything they got, they had to pay for it. There was rent and rates on this place, and there was two jugs and our dresser in there in the old house, and there was money in both of them, and the rate man and the rent man had come and collect them. And that's the way that in the 50s, I remember that my mother had always had that money and she started sending milk to the creamery. That's how she got started, yeah. The first thing she'd have to do, she'd have to have the amount of money they'd want every quarter. It used to come four times a year to collect the rent and the rates.
How has the language changed maybe from your father and your mother's time to your time to now the grandchildren? How has that changed over the years, I wonder?
It's changed that I suppose they lost a lot of the old way of speaking it that we had. But a lot of youngsters speaking it now, but when I'm talking to them, I say things and they look at me and they say, what's that? What does that mean? So the terminology has changed a bit, yeah. Tá cruinneas agus saibhdas na gaiil gima. Cead a hárt?
Cead a hárla? Cead a hárla?
Léag sean buch cead ar da láh. Cead a gair gail ma.
No. You have 5 calves here in front of you.
Yeah.
It's Bodul that you have, it's suckler cows that you have.
Yeah.
And obviously a lot of people came to this area because the land was good. How is farming going at the moment?
Good price for beef at the beef stock at the moment. But I think the rules and regulations now are going to kill the small farmers. You won't make a living out of farming the way we're farming here now, or the amount of land we have. It's all changed and things have gone too expensive.
Martine O'Mailoid there with Trasa Etoine is still with me. You know Martine?
Very well.
Of course.
We have our chats after Mass.
There were many other people who came from Connemara to Leinster. We're given the 22 acres, the piglet and the cow. But those communities didn't survive.
Yeah.
What's the difference between Rathcarn and them?
I would say the main difference is their dialect. So in Rockaran, although the first group came in 1935 and the second group came 2 years later in 1937, they came from Connemara, both groups. So they had the same dialect.
And not from Donegal or not from
they
Kerry.
No, and if you think in those times they didn't have a radio, so they weren't used to hearing those dialects. So I think, I'm not sure, but I think in the other areas that didn't survive, I think they turned to English to understand each other and to have the chats, because it's in Ireland. Right. We'd
so
like
there
to
was
the
something
chats.
To be said for kind of keeping it homogenous. And I wonder though, given that, you know, where you are geographically, you're within the Dublin commuter belt, and we all know about the pressure on housing.
Yeah.
Can Rathcarn keep its distinct nature?
I think, do you know what, my father has a great phrase, and he says, we're strong, but we're small but mighty, or we're small but strong. And I think if you have that spirit, we will survive. And I think it's so important that we do have people attending our primary schools, our secondary schools. And also,
you have a Gael school, a secondary
school.
We do,
yeah.
So that will make a big difference, won't
totally,
it?
Totally, totally. And I think if they support the shop, and if money is coming into the place, it's providing jobs for people, but it's also creating that community spirit. Because, again, to go back to your last question, when the people came in 1935, they knew that they needed a community, so they created a cultural co-op, and they started to work together as a community. And I think if we keep that going, I think it will survive.
Okay, so talk to me about the 90th anniversary celebrations then. There's a lot of different events. I'll allow you to tell me about two or three.
Yeah, okay, so the first one is happening on the 31st of March at 10 o'clock, where Scully Rowney, so that is the primary school, they will be down at our local park, and the kids will cycle from that park back to the primary school. And it's just symbolising the bicycles that came from Connemara to Rockaran in 1935. And it's going to be really, really sweet, because on either sides of the road, locals will come out and wear either Galway jerseys or the Galway colours, or the Meath jersey or the Meath colours.
Split loyalty.
Not really nice.
There, isn't it?
Yeah, it's so lovely.
Give me another one.
And then the second one is happening on the 12th of April. So it's 9 years exactly. And that is, so the Heritage Centre, or the Heritage Community Gumleshgill, will have history talks, and they'll also bring people who are interested in the history of Rockaran. Okay. They'll bring them to the houses.
And when your sister Maura has returned to good health,
yeah.
So sorry she wasn't able to join us this morning, where else can we hear on Kate Dinella?
So we gig all over Ireland, but do you know what? If you follow us on Instagram or Facebook, we have all of our details there. Ella. So A-N-C-H-E-L-T.
See how nicely she corrected my pronunciation. That was so sweet of you to do it that way.
No problem.
For that, I promise to do my very best to try and fit in a little bit more music before the end of the programme.
Fabulous.
Thank you very much for coming to us this morning.
Email countrywide at rte.ie. Countrywide on RTE Radio 1.
Now, this is the only programme on RTE Radio 1, I can say without fear of contradiction, where when we talk about AI, it is about artificial insemination and not artificial intelligence. So adjust your understanding of the meaning of AI for the next few minutes, folks. Beef and dairy farmers up and down the country have been very upset this week to hear that four of the companies that sell them frozen semen straws intend in the future to assert their intellectual property rights over the calves born from these straws, a kind of a case of it may be your cow, but the calf is ours. Gerard Marr in Cappamore in Limerick told me what he thought about this move.
Well, from what I see, it's basically AI companies have a right over your offspring.
Are claiming a right.
Are claiming a right over your progeny from your dam. I don't know how they could even think that they could do that. Like, you know, if I sell a heifer here, an in-calf heifer, and that heifer calves down on another man's farm, and has a bull calf that goes into AI,
it'd be a bit rich for you to turn up and try and claim it.
Exactly, and this is no different to what they're doing. I think there's a high level of arrogance there from the AI companies to even come up with this. And furthermore, I think the timing of it was all wrong. To come out with this in the month of January, early February.
When you're sleep deprived and still in the
middle
of calving.
Well, they know it's our busiest time of year, and it would have been an awful lot better if it had come out in October, November, when we had time to digest it. I don't see any benefit for the farmer in this. I think it's they're ensuring that they'll have a supply of bulls, and we're basically, they're tying our hands behind our back because you've lost your freedom to do what you want with your stock. Any animal that calves here is mine and nobody else's. It's crazy to think that someone can say, no, well, we own a percentage of that. If that's the case, let them keep their straws. We'll find straws somewhere else.
Gerard Marr. Dennis Drennan, president of the ICMSA, the organisation representing dairy farmers, joins me now on the line. We asked each of the four companies involved in this proposal, Dovea, Eurogene, Munster Bovine and Progressive Genetics, if they would like to contribute to this morning's discussion. They decided not to provide a spokesperson, but they have released a statement setting out their position. Dennis, good morning to you. Dennis... Oh, I seem to have a little bit of a problem getting Dennis up on the line there. Do we have Dennis? All right. Well, the situation here, as I understand it, is that they are... Dennis, are you there with me now?
I'm so sorry. I don't know what happened. The gateway just came up. It just failed and I haven't even moved an inch. And I'm connected to broadband. Everything's going on, so I've no idea what's happening.
Well, you're back with us now. You're talking to Philip. You're on the air. We'll get underway.
Oh, Philip. Not at all.
Dennis, in short, they are saying, these four companies, that they want to avoid a situation where a competitor company could be sold a bull calf or a bull that is the product of many years of their research and their selective breeding. Isn't that fair enough?
Well, I think you want to go back and look at where this bull calf come from, Philip. I mean, it's the farmer's breeding policy that has developed this bull calf. It's the farmer's money that has gone in and the department and the co-ops and meat factories that have paid for the genotyping. They don't control the database. That's controlled by ICBF. So these are the questions we've asked, like, do they actually have the right to put an IP on these calves? Are these bulls, these animals? And we haven't got a satisfactory response on that. Like, it's mainly the farmers' work that has developed these bulls. They don't get involved in the farmers' breeding policy. They don't do the genotyping. They don't control the database. So what do? Just buy a bull calf, and now they say they want to put an IP on this. And in fairness, they've even put IP on bulls that were bought months ago off farmers who weren't aware that there was going to be an IP put on those calves.
Okay, IP is intellectual property. And yes, in fairness, I suppose 50% of the genes belong to your cow. It's not just the semen from their bull. But where they have put research in, where they have selectively bred to come up with low risk for contracting TB animals, where they have bred to come up with lower methane emission animals, do they not deserve to be able to hold on to that knowledge and make sure that it isn't sold for a couple of hundred euro to a competitor?
Well, most of that work has been carried out by the farmer through their own breeding policy. Like, if you talk to anybody like Garoa, they're the top breeders in the country. Like, it's there. They sit down at Christmas time and decide what bulls they're going to use on which particular cow. And they're the ones that make the decision. They're the ones that have developed these cows that are capable of producing these, you know, high genetic merit animals. And they're the ones that have put the money into the genotyping and looking back at the generations of these cows in certain farms. So I think we're not completely against this. We just think we need to press pause. We need to make people aware of if they're signing up to this, what they're signing up to, and the implications it has down the line. And is it fair that somebody who uses a straw on their own cow using their own breeding policy, that they're limited as regards where that calf or that heifer, for want of, can be sold? And I think that's something that a lot of farmers don't realise, that it's going to affect the next two generations. So if you use an IP straw on a cow this summer, and she calves next year, if that cow has a heifer calf, the offspring of that heifer forevermore are controlled by the AI companies and controlled by just four AI companies who control about 80% of the AI scenario in this country, which we think is a little unfair.
All right, Dennis Drennan, president of the ICMSA, thank you very much for that. Now, although the weather this weekend is not as promising as earlier on in the week, those fine spring days were really a good sign to tell us all to get out and about for a good walk. Aoife Rankin from Galway did so and still loves the outdoors in spite of what you're about to hear that happened to her. She has been campaigning in Galway City and County to erect signage warning walkers about Lyme's disease, which can be caused by a tick bite. The city has agreed to do so. The council will consider the matter before the end of the month. Aoife contracted Lyme's disease more than 10 years ago. She's currently fundraising to get additional treatment abroad for her condition. And she explained to Lorna Siggins when they met to walk their dogs in the swamp in Galway's Cladda why she wants everyone to know about the danger of ticks.
Lovely doggy. What's the name of your dog?
Suki.
Suki.
Suki. As Suki. A Japanese name, it means beloved or loved one.
Gorgeous.
Yeah,
beautiful.
Your dog is gorgeous.
And what age is your dog?
4.5. She's still manic.
Say hello to Rua. Oh, that's good. That's a good meeting now. So.
Yeah. I lived in Invern for roughly 7 years, and I used to be quite active out walking with the dogs. And, you know, there were ticks out there in the bog and any of the grassy areas. And I believe that I got a tick bite out in Invern. But as is mostly the case, I imagine I got it in the house from the dogs, even though we would have been meticulous and hypervigilant in taking the removing the ticks from the dogs with tick tweezers. We had a dog, like a lassie dog, and I believe that they could have just went unnoticed, you know. It does, in 50% of cases, you will get a bullseye rash. In my case, you know, I definitely didn't get a rash. I would have seen it. So it took 10 years to be diagnosed. And it affected all kind of, you know, facets of my life, you know, my professional life as well. But 2 years ago, I started to become just violently sick, and I was going from hospital to hospital. Nobody was diagnosing me. And in the end, my GP told me, look, this has to be, you know, either ME, fibromyalgia, or Lyme's disease. So I was lucky that Dr. Lambert took me on board, and he treated me for the last almost 2 years now. But unfortunately, I've got to the stage where the treatment isn't working, and my GP has told me that I need to seek treatment abroad. So look, this is why I'm campaigning for public signage as well, because I just don't want to see anybody else go through this, to suffer with this debilitating illness and these unbearable symptoms. And, you know, by getting public signage erected in the Galway City and Galway County, you know, at least we can prevent that from happening, you know, and especially for children, you know, and anyone that works outdoors, you know, in farmers and so on. You know, Lyme's disease is known as the great imitator. So it mimics other diseases. A lot of people with chronic fatigue are, as the experts say, rheumatoid arthritis could possibly have Lyme's disease.
So with the signage, what sort of information will be on the signs?
So with the signage, basically, these are signs that are given to us by the Lyme Resource Centre. And basically the signs will be, they're not huge, but they have the information that's required on the actual sign, and then they have QR codes that you can scan to get additional information on how to safeguard yourself and your children in terms of getting a tick. So to wear maybe, you know, to wear light clothes, to tuck your trousers into your socks, to make sure you shower afterwards. You know, and then how to deal with it if you do find a tick, not to just yank it out, because if you do that, it'll, you know, the tick could get stuck and it could regurgitate all of the infections, not just one infection, infections that they carry into the bloodstream.
What's the best way if you see a tick? If you're lucky enough to spot a tick, what's the best way to approach it?
Well, if you have a tick tweezers, it's ideal. But if you don't, a card would do, you know, with a V in it. And just to extract it, to pull upwards, you know, slowly. and to kind of pull it out that way.
To make sure that it all comes out.
Yeah, exactly.
And it hasn't put you off getting dogs?
No. Look, she's the same colour, I'd say, as a tick, but she's been great. She's a great companion to have.
Yeah.
You know, especially when you're isolated in bed yourself all the time with this illness. And I had people that helped me, you know, walk her and look after her and mind her. You know, it's just important to check them all the time. Mm-hmm. And look, it's like going out in nature. Just because there's ticks, you know, you're not going to not go on a hike or go out in nature. That's really important. And especially with all the time that people are on screens, you know, and I wouldn't like to scaremonger anyone out of going into nature and going for walks. It's just really important to put measures in place that people are aware of this illness. Mine has progressed. It's done, you know, internal damage. I now have, you know, palpitations. I have chronic pain all over in my arms, legs, feet, hands, abdomen. I could go on and on with the symptoms. You don't want to get this illness. You know, it's really important to know that there are ticks out there that have infections in them.
It is an absolutely horrendous condition, no doubt about it. Aoife Rankin there speaking to Lorna Siggins. But do remember that if you do get a tick, and you should always check yourself for them, it does not necessarily follow that that tick has Lyme's disease. I don't know what the odds are, but not all ticks have Lyme's disease. And as Aoife says, do not squeeze it, do not pop it, do not pull it straight out. Twist it. And then pull it gently up, ideally with a tweezers or something other than your bare hands. Aoife Rankin talking to Lorna Siggins, as I said. The EPA published water quality figures during the week. They were widely seen as good news because there were signs that some of the efforts being taken on farms to avoid nitrate runoff were beginning to show results. Is it enough of an improvement, though, to persuade the other 26 members of the EU that Ireland should continue to get a competitive advantage with a derogation from pollution controls, the nitrates directive, in other words, that they don't get? Well, Eddie Burgess in Chagask is a water quality specialist who has helped us translate the figures from these reports into plain English in the past, and he joins me now to do so once more. Good morning, Eddie.
Good morning, Philip.
What did this report say?
This report is a good news report, which is always very welcome, and with a lot of environmental issues is quite rare. And this report said that the nitrate concentrations in our rivers across the country in 2024 are shown an improvement in that the concentrations are declining in comparison with the previous year, and on a trend since 2019, there seems to be a declining level of nitrate leaving our estuaries, which is great news. And in part, some of that is responsible from all the actions that farmers have been encouraged to put in place. Through incentives and through regulation and through general encouragement from agricultural industry. So it's great to see some response.
It's not all good news, though.
Well, it's not all good news. I suppose we have to keep everything in context. People would be forgiven for thinking that nitrate in water, and there are many forms of nitrogen, but the form that it takes when it gets carried by water is nitrate, NO3, is the chemical symbol for it. People would be forgiven for thinking that nitrate is the only aspect of water quality. And the term water quality is one that personally I'm not that fond of, because I think it takes the focus off specific aspects. And at different times of the year, in different locations, in different physical settings, there are different aspects to water quality that we need to consider. Nitrate is only one of them. And the Nitrates Directive would also kind of lead you to believe that nitrate is the only one. But there is the biological quality of our rivers, biological quality of our lakes and our estuaries. There's a term called hydromorphology, which is to do with the river shape and sediment and blockages and dams. And then there's temperature and phosphorus and oxygen content or oxygen demand. There are many, many different aspects.
And how are we doing on those, Eddie?
Well, time will tell on a national perspective. The EPA are going to come out with a report in June on the chemical content, nitrogen and phosphorus across all the water bodies in 2024. And later in the year, I'd say August, September, they'll come out with a water quality in Ireland report. It's a three-year report, which will include the biological status. The term used there is the Q status. And it'll also include the nitrogen that is in this report.
So and what you're saying here is, Eddie, that although we are absolutely obsessed and focusing so much on nitrates and the nitrous derogation, that is a little bit like walking down a street and asking yourself, what's the litter like here? And only looking at the crisp packets and not looking at the chewing gum and not looking at the sweet wrappers and not looking at the beer cans.
Yeah, that is a good analogy. Another analogy I use with dairy farmers would be people who talk about their milk quality, and they get paid for milk quality, and their milk solids content, their butter fat and protein could be relevant, but could be extremely important. And they've gone through a lot of breeding and nutrition to try and improve that. But if their hygiene in their parlour isn't good enough and their cell count is through the roof and they get penalised or not even accepted, your milk quality isn't that relevant. Okay. Your solids content isn't relevant. So we need to be cognizant of the fact that nitrate is not the only factor. But it is great to hear that there are improvements taking place.
Well, is there any way of identifying what it is that has been done that is proving effective in some places and transferring it to those parts, particularly the southeast of the country, that are still not improving as fast as we need them to?
It's very difficult. The nitrate loss is a very complicated process, and to try and understand how it happens, you need to have a good understanding of the nitrogen cycle. There, nitrogen is all around us. The air is 78% nitrogen. A hectare of soil could contain between 5 and 15,000 kilograms of nitrogen. Plants take up nitrogen in mineral form as ammonium or nitrate. Nitrate gets leached, and it's a living cycle. It's the bacteria that transform nitrogen from one form to another. And really, it's very, very difficult pinpoint and say it's exactly this factor. And anyone that tells you that it is, I would argue, doesn't understand all the processes that are involved.
And just finally, Eddie, this report, as much as it is good news, it is the report that is going to come out this summer that looks at all of those other pollution sources and considers a longer time period, 3 years, that's going to be decisive in terms of whether we hold on to the derogation or not, is it?
It is. Yeah, it is. They all play a part. There are four meetings a year of the Nitrates Committee in Europe, in Brussels, with all the member states. One took place last week, and this report would have been highlighted at that meeting. One in December, June, September, and then in December this year, hopefully all the information will be in front of them and they'll make a decision.
Eddie Burgess.
We Yep.
No, go
Thanks,
on,
Philip.
Make your final point there.
The final point, the report divided the country in half, into catchments of concern and catchments that are okay for nitrate. The catchments of concerns have a declining nitrate level, but it's still above what the EPA would like. I think we need to look at a smaller scale. We need to look at individual river catchments, because within the catchments that are of concern, some have much lower and a greater declining levels than others.
And look at what is going on there.
Tributaries,
whether it's the soil type or whether it's agricultural practices or whatever that has changed. Eddie Burgess, thank you very much for talking to us this morning. I want to go back to Silver Mines just before we finish up today, and Maurice Leamy's farm, for something of a postscript. There was two really remarkable things that happened there this week. First off, he had a yo who gave birth to two lambs from different fathers a week apart. What are the chances of that? And then, as you heard him say in the report earlier on, he has these yows that like to head to the ring fort on his farm to lamb. Well, on Thursday night, he went out there and he found a yow with quadruplets sitting in the middle of the ring fort. Quadruplets. But wait, it wasn't over. He sent me a video and this is what happened next.
Philip, make that five. She's just after having another one. We brought her in because I didn't fancy leaving out four small ones with the fox and stuff. And look what she's after doing. Giving me a fifth one. Oh my God. That's miracles.
Quintuplets. I checked it up. It's a one in a million chance. Check out the RT Radio 1 social media feed because that WhatsApp message was actually a video. We put it up. All right, let's go back to Uncaid Glue and Ella to play us out this morning. This is Tom McClowis Nadenta. Have a good weekend, everybody. Sinead Mooney up next. Brenda Donahue produced. Talk to you next week.
Countrywide on RTE Radio 1. Listen back on the RTE Radio Player.